This is Douglas Grant. I'm a recording engineer, multimedia producer, and promoter of renewable energy living in Tucson, Arizona. Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band is a very special record for me because in the summer of 1967, I was 11 years old. My father, who was a professor at the University of Vermont, took a sabbatical. And my mother's originally from the UK. She was a Blitz baby. So we all went over to England, and he worked in London for a year. And I went to school. We actually sailed the Atlantic twice, both directions, going and coming back a year later. And so we arrived in Southampton, and one of the first visits we made was to my mother's Uncle Ben and his daughter Lisa, my cousin. Had a new record, which had just come out, I think, about 2 weeks prior to our arrival in England, and it was Sgt. Pepper. So I heard it at her place, and, you know, I was already a big Beatles fan, and you can imagine at 11 years old, you know, formative years that really are shaping the rest of your life and your aesthetics and your attitude, philosophy. It's just starting to coalesce, you know. So I lived in the UK from the summer of 67 to summer of 68, which is a pretty heady time for music, and pirate radio was playing the cream and flower of pop music, and here was this album that essentially welcomed us to England. So my personal relationship with this album has some very special meaning. Our mother used to buy us Beatle records when they came out, starting, you know, not long after the Ed Sullivan Show, which is interesting because my parents listened to pretty much just classical music, but she recognized the melodic qualities early on. She would buy us the mono versions because we didn't have a stereo and you could save a dollar, you know. And so I knew all of their records very thoroughly and was getting more and more thrilled with Hard Day's Night, Help, Rubber Soul, and Revolver. And then this was clearly part of the progression, but I had no trouble at all falling in love with the album. Sgt. Pepper is often cited as being an early concept or thematic album, maybe the first in pop music. And it's also been criticized for some of the artifice and perhaps a little too glossy, a little bit too smooth for some people's tastes, having enjoyed Beatles with a little bit more of a rough edge to them, which has been smoothed out on this record. We tend to refer to the album as Sgt. Pepper, or even just Pepper, and not by its full long name. Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, Lonely Hearts. I think that's very interesting. The concept of the Lonely Heart, taken together with the material on the album, suggests more than just someone who's looking for a date. I think it suggests that this lonely heart that's being referred to is someone who cares, someone who is a giver, someone who's looking for a deeper meaning and a greater understanding of life, someone who's trying to be virtuous and good and has a very rich inner emotional and spiritual life, who discovers that life doesn't offer up too many people who are the same way, and thus the loneliness. And I think Paul McCartney, whose album this is in many regards, shaped the project, as we now know, and wrote most of the material, was making a statement there. Sgt. Pepper, never mind being a concept album or being touted as the best this or the... It is melodic. It is memorable. It's a sophisticated record. And I think very notably, it is a very sincere and positive work. And even more striking now, 40 years later, when much of popular music tends to be steeped in malaise, boredom, or even a celebration of violence and a lot of negativity. It is a very positive record. Paul McCartney's influence on this record is very striking now looking back. It was much harder as a young person to sort out whose influence was what exactly, because the Beatles were so much more than the sum of their parts, and that I have to include Jeff Emerick, their engineer, and of course George Martin, the producer, because we know that band, and especially with this record, we know them not as a performing live act. We know them from a recorded work whose product, it really is not their record, it's George Martin's record. He was a producer. He was the record guy. He took their raw materials and talents and songs and helped to shape them. And so to, I think, a very great extent, and this applies to not just Sgt. Pepper, but to all of them, we know the Beatles because we know George Martin's work, George with his staff. These albums are his products. So Paul McCartney's influence, now looking back, is very obvious. And he's a romantic, sentimental. He returns again and again to certain quaint and old-fashioned type themes over the course of the career, such as When I'm 64, you know, which he wrote when he was a young man, and it already had that old-timey kind of feeling, kind of taking a lighthearted survey of life and aging. So after the introduction, with a little help from my friend, you know, appreciation of the difficulties that we face in life and how we're blessed to have some who do feel as we do and understand us and help us get by, help us get through the tough times. Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds, as many times as it's probably honestly pointed out that that was a description of Julian's artwork, but that doesn't mean that it had nothing to do with the initials that are represented. Of course, it was the time of 1967. Interestingly, that the song itself is not an acid trip. It's a little fantasy. It's colorful, and it does suggest an inner imaginative world that coexists with and sometimes is much more important than the material world that we see when we just look outward. Then the next two, Getting Better and Fixing a Hole. Optimistic, very positive message, letting go of bad habits, bad patterns, and trying to be a better person and to solve problems, clear out the cobwebs, fix the hole that's annoying you instead of just being annoyed by it, making an effort to tidy up your life and essentially get your act together and make your life better for yourself and for other people. She's Leaving Home, I think, is going to be more and more appreciated as time goes by and remembered, I think, longer than many of the Beatles songs will be, just because the composition and the melody and the structure are so strong and timeless. The sad story of a girl who's just not finding fulfillment in the life that she's living with her parents and leaves hoping for something better. That's a universal theme, probably as old as literature. She goes off with somebody in the motor trade, which doesn't necessarily suggest that she's going to find lasting happiness, but she's going off looking. Being for the Benefit of Mr. Kite is another John Lennon fantasy, this one based on a poster, as we all know now, kind of offsetting some of the headier themes in the record, and the more serious themes, more universal themes. It's just, a bit of fun and having a circus and a diversion. Within You, Without You is as good as anything I think the Beatles have ever done. The lyrics are eternally important. The piece of music, the arrangement of it, are just superb. And George Harrison, if he hadn't already earned his place in the annals of music with Within You, Without You. It is, in many ways, the heart of this album, because the album addresses some very important and transcendental issues of how to lead a good life, a meaningful life. With the album playing one side, and then after Mr. Kite ended, of course, you'd have to flip it over. So there was a big pause there. And then Within You, Without You sort of fades in gently in a whole new place. And it is, in many ways, the heart of the record, even more so when you had that big pause, because it let the calliope and the circus, the diversion, fade away. And then a meditative, introspective reflection on life and how it should be lived by higher principles, not being swept away by things that are surfacey, by glitter, and instead seeking a better way to live with ideals and higher principles. Okay, so lovely Rita. Lovely Rita, again, Paul
McCartney.
Well, we already talked about it, I guess. Okay. Oh, yeah. But the arrangement, yeah, the arrangement, everything. When I'm 64, it anticipates Honey Pie and Maxwell Silverhammer, you know, all the sort of oompah, old-timey sounding songs, and Paul McCartney has written many of those. Lovely Rita has his fingerprints all over it again. A little bit risque, sort of really the only element that of sex in the album. And it's certainly not overbearing. It's understated, sitting on a sofa with a sister or two. And then, you know, the grunting and noises afterwards, which they had some fun with, that suggested that maybe it went beyond just having tea with a meter maid. Good morning, good morning. To me, it was suggested sort of after being up all night in an altered state of consciousness, coming back outside and seeing the hustle and bustle of everyday life and how meaningless a lot of it can seem after you've been contemplating things from a much higher point of view. A Day in the Life is sort of a summing up, and if the album as a whole has been somewhat flighty or fanciful, it ends on much more of a serious or sedate note about, I have to tell you, by the way, we took a vacation in Cornwall in 1967, and coming back, we were coming through Bath, and in our little Cortina estate wagon, or whatever it's called, and we were involved in an accident. There were one car ahead of us, and, you know, they have these zebra crossings there, and if someone sticks their foot into there, you know, you're supposed to stop. So apparently somebody put their foot into the road. The guy in front of us slammed on his brakes. My father slammed on his brakes, and we stopped in time. Unfortunately, the car behind us did not. It was an older gentleman who stepped on the accelerator instead of the brake and smashed into us. And he was a member of the House of Lords. So I kind of feel a connection to that song, too. Looking at both the serious and mundane side of life and finally suggesting, I'd love to turn you on. In other words, there is so much more than this, and it's inside. The bass line, and with a little help from my friends, is just absolutely infectious. It's a song that I think I sing the bass line to myself as much as anything else. The opening of Getting Better, just a great, powerful introduction, followed by terrific harmonies and a really positive song. She's Leaving Home is just a personal favorite, and I never get tired of it. It is such a well-written song. I just think it's one of the best songs that Paul McCartney ever wrote. Another element that I have always loved is in Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds, after the chorus, and when they go, you know, and you hear a tambura, the Indian drone instrument, which Jeff Emerick has close mic'd and compressed the hell out of. So it's just got this, and well, what was that sound? You know, no idea exactly how they got that. You could sort of tell that it was Indian, but that's not the way you're supposed to record a tambura. And it was done for effect, and I really love that. And in fact, all these years later, as a recording engineer, having the ability on a synthesizer to play the tambura sound, even if I don't own the physical instrument, and then just kind of playing around with how he got that sound. And even so, it's hard to do. Strawberry Fields is unlike any other record ever made. And once again, referring to the ability to play sounds on a synthesizer, which aren't necessarily inside the keyboard, but using the keyboard to play loops of sound. Interesting, the Mellotron was playing loops of tape. A maintenance nightmare It had one tape loop for each note, and those loops were made in such a way that you didn't really quite hear where it ended and began, where the seam was. And the introduction to Strawberry Fields was a flute sound, which I now have the ability to play. And the first time I acquired the Mellotron sound font, being able to have that sound of the introduction of that record come out of my speakers was such a thrill. And I'm sure that any musician who knows the Beatles, who got themselves in front of a Mellotron, probably did just the same thing and had the same thrill if they were able to pull it off. It's such a unique sound. And, of course, the record itself is, George Martin thinks it's one of the best that that they ever gave him, that John Lennon particularly ever gave him. He counts that as a particularly significant and meaningful recording. Likewise with Penny Lane, speaking personally, when I got a synthesizer, it was about 1990, and it had multi-track recording inside, so it had many different voices, and without needing to go to an external multi-track recording device, you could lay in a lot of different tracks. So my task I gave myself was to recreate Penny Lane in all its glory, minus the vocal. I had to just use an instrument, a French horn or something for the vocal, but played each part and laid it in as near faithfully as I could. And I got an enormous amount of satisfaction doing that, seeing if I could make this instrument reproduce the wonderful song and great arrangements. I mean, you've got those horn parts, the flute, the middle bit with the incredibly high piccolo trumpet, and another record. Imagine their flip side, unlike any. There's nothing else like Penny Lane. So Strawberry Fields and Penny Lane are unique as they are wonderful.